I'll begin tonight with a story that comes to mind now and then that I think is a good one. And this took place a long time ago, somewhere far away, where a very elderly king, knowing he was at the end of his life, wanted to find an heir to the kingdom. And rather than just anointing an eldest son or whatever, he was very democratic-minded. And he basically said, anybody that feels it in them to take this role and to hold the kingdom and offer blessings to this kingdom, come and I'll interview you. And so the great day that was eagerly awaited arrived. And when people came, and hundreds of people came, first he offered, they had these baths in the palace so that everybody could be cleansed. And then they were escorted into these great chambers where there were huge wardrobes. And this is to kind of level the playing field. They could pick out clothes to wear and scarves, and there was jewelry for the women. And then there was a banquet table so they could all be well fed, you know, just really lush and rich. And meanwhile, the king and his counselor sat upstairs and waited for the people from the kingdom to begin to come up and be interviewed. And hours passed. And just time kept going on, and there was the sound of great merriment downstairs below, but nobody came up. And finally, the king asked his counselor, what was happening. The counselor went downstairs to the great chambers and after many hours found that the place was empty and that everything had been taken, including some of the silverware, of course. But the place was empty and no one was there, and came up and told His Majesty that the people had forgotten why they came. So this is a lead-in to what I'd like to talk about tonight, which is really the trance of desire. How when we get caught in wanting, we forget really what we're doing here. We forget why we came. We forget what matters. I spent the last few weeks talking about the trance of fear, which is really when we get caught in our reaction to unpleasantness, we leave home, we disconnect, we go into reactivity. So this is really what happens when we get caught in wanting and grasping. And the most classical description in Buddhism of suffering is the suffering of clinging. Read to you. By understanding and relinquishing desire, we become free from suffering. The path to nibbana is the abandoning and destruction of desire and craving. The Dhammapada says, this is classic scriptures, there's no sickness like the hunger of the heart. Extinguish this thirst. So, my own history is I was introduced to Buddhism in high school, and I was introduced to this message. And I remember very well going to class. It was 11th grade, and being told that the Buddhist message is that everybody suffers. It was a real fix on suffering, and that we needed to get rid of all our desire. And I remember leaving that course thinking I'd finally found the one religion I knew I'd never have anything to do with, you know. And it definitely wasn't for me. You know, why this morbid emphasis on unpleasantness and get rid of desire? Are you kidding? I mean, that was, you know, I loved my desires. It was a lot of fun, you know, being hedonistic. So to me, it was as dreary as it could get. And my sense is that probably one of the most misunderstood parts of Buddhism is the notion that desire is the source of suffering. So I just want to say that in writing my notes, I started kind of jotting down some things that I had in mind a couple of nights ago for tonight. I sat with a big bowl of Häagen-Dazs ice cream as I was doing it, just to kind of put me in the mood, or else to rebel against whatever. Anyway, let me read to you a few writings from different scriptures and teachers, or teachings on desire, different tones. So there's Suzuki Roshi, and he says, "What is your deepest longing? Follow your heart." Then there's the Tibetans that say, "Within desire are the seeds of love and freedom. What is considered the poison is the medicine." Then there's Rumi. He's not Buddhist, but, you know, we Buddhists think he is. From the urgent way lovers want each other to the sannyasin's search for truth, all moving is from the mover. Every pull draws us to the ocean. And then back to the classical scriptures again, the Majjhima Nikaya. Most people fail to see reality because of wanting. They are attached. They cling to material objects, to pleasures, to the things of this world. This very clinging is the source of suffering. So you see, there's different flavors of this. My sense is that there is truth in each of the kind of main, if we just say the main domains that describe suffering and clinging, that there's truth in each. And to have a wise understanding, to understand the shadow side of each is really important. Which means that when someone says, follow your bliss, that all moving is from the mover, there's a shadow side, which is something like the idea of, okay, whatever I want, my desires, I'll celebrate them. And then we get fixated. Our desires fixate our attention. And we get hitched to substitutes, what I call substitutes. And we spend our life chasing after what we think our bliss is. And we're never here. We don't pause and arrive and ever discover that contentment which says, okay, this moment's enough. So that's the shadow side of go follow your bliss. There's a sense of you're always kind of chasing down something. And there's a shadow side to saying desire's the enemy, vanquish it. And that is that embedded in that can easily be an aversion to life, to the natural pleasures of this embodiment, to the beauty in this world. In a way, we start defending against what's enjoyment. And it's a shame induction to say that desire is bad because we are all rigged biologically, psychologically of desires is like saying you're bad. Anytime they arise, there's a feeling of spiritual badness. So do you see the shadow side to each? So just to explore what's the middle way, what's a wise way to relate to the rising desire, just the words of Blake are very good on this right now, which is, he who binds to himself a joy does the winged life destroy. But he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. So let's explore what it really means to have a wise relationship with the enormity of desire, because it's so big. And first to say, what is it? And I sometimes just think of it as the force of attraction. It's like, it's what creates the world. It's the ground of all existence. It's like gravity. Desire, that energy of coming together, brings atoms together into molecules. You know, and it brings sperms to eggs and people into communities. I mean, desire brings us together tonight. There's some wanting for something. We wouldn't come. It moves us. Walpola Rahula, he wrote a book called What the Buddha Taught, talks about the arising of desire as basically the thirst to exist. Without desire, there would not be existence. So again, I say this so that we begin by freeing desire of a notion of wrongness. This was a story from public radio that described an infant born with a rare disease in which there's no epidermis. With no skin yet developed, the baby was in excruciating pain. It was nearly impossible to comfort this child because the least touch was agonizing. The nurses were starting to avoid the baby, and the child was on the brink of death. Finally, a wise doctor said, "We've got to come up with something that will make this child want to stay here." So they decided to play Vivaldi and Mozart, and then the tide began to change. The infant calmed down enough to begin to take food and medicine. The nurses were not so overwhelmed by the child's condition. And bit by bit, there came the necessary healing and growth that would let this child live. So the child's doctor recognized that without the desire to live, no medical intervention would be enough. So the desire is necessary to live. It's necessary to heal. There's something in us that has to want to live, want to come into fullness, for anything to begin to heal. On an everyday basis, the force of desire, of attraction, of wanting is behind all our doings. I mean, it moves us to get things done and to be nice to each other and to plan our day and to shift our position moment to moment. So being embarrassed about desire is the same as being embarrassed about being alive. And yet we are, actually. We get embarrassed about it. So a deeper understanding of the Buddha's teaching is that we experience suffering from desire when our sense of our being gets hitched to it, when our world contracts because of desire, and we lose sight of who we are and we disconnect from the present moment. In other words, desire is natural, but when we contract and we lose our sense of presence and wholeness, when we lose our sense of love, when we lose our sense of what's true, then there's suffering. And that the freedom from suffering is that when desire arises, if we can be mindful. No small thing, by the way. That's why they say desire is enchanting. We get enchanted, we lose mindfulness and contract. So I want to explore, how do we wake up from that? How do we wake up from that? And the first step is to begin to get familiar with the different domains. And I'll just mention them, the classic domains that desire gets fixated to. And the one that we most are familiar with is sense pleasure, that whether it's feeling good through, you know, pleasant tastes or sounds or sensual or sexual experience, it's very riveting. I mean, that we want pleasure and we spend a lot of time pursuing it. So in that vein, some of you are going to remember this, one of my favorite examples. A man and a woman were sitting beside each other in the first class section of a plane. The woman sneezed, took out a tissue, gently wiped her nose, and then shuddered quite violently. For 10 to 15 seconds, the man went back to his reading. But a few minutes later, she did it again. Took out her tissue, wiped her nose, shuddered violently, and he started getting curious about the shuddering. A few more minutes passed, she sneezed, she wiped her nose, she shuddered, and then the man couldn't restrain his curiosity. So he turned and said, "You know, you've sneezed three times and you've wiped your nose with a tissue and then you've shuddered violently. Are you all right?" And she said, "Oh, I'm sorry if I disturbed you." She says, "I have a rare condition. When I sneeze, I have an orgasm." Now, the man was a little embarrassed, but then he got even more curious and he said, "You know, I've never heard of that before. What are you taking for it?" And she looked at him and she said, "Pepper." So this is what it is. We keep on doing whatever we can to keep getting another hit of pleasure. So some of them are sensual pleasures. Some of them are the kind of mental pleasures where we just mentally keep fixating on stories that make us feel good. Or we fixate on products or objects or whatever that stimulate our mind in a way that makes us feel good. I remember hearing about the Dalai Lama when he was on the West Coast teaching. Each day going to the hall that he was teaching at, he passed this big mall with a huge electronics store. And one day he got the driver to stop and they went in. And he said that he wanted to buy things he didn't even know what they were. You know, but he, and you know what it's like in a mall. All of a sudden you realize, oh, kitchenware. Well, I could use a little bit. And then you go, oh, my gosh, jewelry. And then, you know, it's like it goes on and on. Everything you see, there's some possibility of wanting. It's so in our culture. We are hit by billions of dollars worth of advertising to keep, you know, wanting to consume more, experience more. We're hooked. They wouldn't be able to put the money into the advertisements unless they worked. We're hooked. Then there's another level where we get addicted, which has to do with affirming our egos. And this is, in a way, I think, more important to get familiar with how much we spend times. We're hooked on seeking approval. We really want others to approve of us. We're hooked on how we appear, our image. To ourselves, we're hooked. We really want to feel good about ourselves. So we're hooked on doing things, accomplishing and proving ourselves to ourselves. And we're hooked, this is wanting, this is attachment, on how we appear to others. A lot of moments of our day, our thoughts and actions have to do with how we're going to appear to others. We're hooked on our beliefs and our views, especially around now, come November. We believe we're right, and we're very hooked on that. And some of you will remember, again, one of my old favorites, a Taoist master sitting naked in his mountain cabin meditating. A group of Confucianists entered the door of his hut, having hiked up the mountain, intending to lecture him on the rules of proper conduct. When they saw the sage sitting naked before them, they were shocked and asked, "What are you doing sitting in your hut without any pants on?" The sage replied, "This entire universe is my hut. This little hut is my pants. What are you fellows doing inside my pants?" Right? It doesn't matter whether it's religious groups or political or social, we are hooked on being right. So this is an attachment. It really is. Then, in the most basic way, we're hooked on our physical existence. We are attached to surviving, to breathing, to having food. So we see that. This is on the needs level. Even more subtle, we're hooked on the existence, sensing the existence of a self. And this is where, when we start quieting down and meditating, we start realizing how much we're attached to continuing to create and generate stories that tell us we're here. Even when there's not a lot of overt wanting or fearing, there's this subtle want to reaffirm, I'm here, me, this person, and to have an idea of a timeline to orient to I'm a self on my way and getting a sense of where we're going. We want to have some ground, so we're attached to this sense of a self here on my way, oriented. So what's the suffering that comes of this? When our being gets organized around having it a certain way, having a sense of self here on the most subtle level, but more grossly, being able to prove ourselves, get approval, look good, have that next drink of alcohol or cigarette, when it becomes compelling and our sense of our life, it's like, if only mine, I have to have this to be happy, we are not able to be here. We disconnect from the present moment and we lose sight of who we are. So I like to do a few reflections tonight, just so this, you can find out for yourself what's true in your life around desire and suffering and freedom. And the first reflection's a simple one, if you will, just to let your attention go inward. And I always suggest just to sense this as a pause. So you really can, if your mind's been kind of zipping around as I've been speaking, just again breathe and arrive. Feel yourself here. And I'd like to invite you to bring to mind recently, today, this week, or recently, some moments when you really wanted something. And it might have been moments when there was craving for some substance, especially if you find that's a big one for you, where you get caught on food or alcohol or cigarettes or some substance. It might have been that you really, really wanted another person to be different. Maybe it was you wanted somebody really important to approve of you or be attracted to you. Maybe you wanted yourself to be different, like losing weight or being more focused or getting more done. Maybe you wanted something different to happen at work. Maybe you wanted a certain, or do want a certain outcome on election day. But where it's strong. So the invitation is to connect with a time and a situation where wanting is really strong, where it really mattered. And it might be, if you have no clear ones on wanting, where not wanting, where you didn't want something to happen, is really strong. Because that's the flip side. Now take some time to get into it. You know, really sense the story. You can say to yourself, I want such and such, or I don't want such and such. And say it a few times and sense why it matters. You know, how big a deal it is to you. Sense why. And as you do, you might even let the way you're sitting embody the sense of wanting. Like, what happens when you're really wanting? What's it feel like in your body? So see if there's a shift. You might find you're sitting differently, leaning in a certain way. But your face, let your face express it. See if you can inhabit wanting. Or if you put your hand in front of you as a fist, just what would, and you're really sensing, I want, what would your hand be like? What would the feeling in the fist be like? So go ahead and play around. Don't be shy. Everybody's got their eyes closed except me, and I'm looking. But don't worry about that. Now, what's wanting like? Okay, now want even more. What does wanting feel like in your body when you're really wanting something? See if you can exaggerate and sense. What's it like in your mind? Is your mind big or small? Dense or soft? Busy or quiet? When you're wanting, what's the quality of your presence right here? Your sense of space, of connection. What's your sense of who you are when you're wanting? The being that you are. Do you like yourself? So this is the beginning of mindfulness of wanting, just noticing what it's like. And I'll invite you to keep going for now. You can stop. You can breathe. Yeah. Let me just hear just a few words. We'll just hear it around the room just to get a flavor. What do you notice about the experience of wanting? What's really predominant? So just raise your hand and speak loud. Yeah, over there. Focused and irritable? Fear. Focused and fear. Let me ask you, how many of you noticed fear along with wanting? Yeah. Often flips into that. Okay. What else? Yeah, please. Contracted and I'm not enough. So there's a sense of with wanting, there's an incompleteness in who you are. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, please.
Suffering,
out and out suffering. So now we know why the Buddhist scriptures say it, eh? Yeah, up there, please.
Sharp, and not connected.
Sharp, so wanting's got a sharpness and a not connected. Like you're sharp, like you're going out there. Is that what you meant? And you're not connected. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, please. So there's a real difference, and this is where we're going to be going, that when there was an open kind of wanting without clinging, it had a kind of heart quality. But as soon as it got grasping, then there was a voracious quality. And did you like yourself? Did you check it? It didn't feel good to be. Yeah. It's not a what?
Not
a pleasant feeling. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, yeah, please. Not part of the present space, because wanting is for the next moment to contain what this moment does not. The very essence of wanting is for something else. Thank you. Anyone else? Because these are all. Yeah, thank you. This is good. So angry, like what it was that you were focusing on had some control over you. So it's almost like with the wanting, a sense of like you were losing yourself, or it was getting something from you. Yeah. Okay. So it takes us away from ourselves. Yeah. With wanting. You felt like it's not your fault that everybody has what you want? Blaming others for having what you want. So it brought up blame towards others. So in a way, I want to thank you for participating. And I saw some of you sit in the way you were sitting. I could feel it. Like, there's this almost like this, if you embodied it physically, wanting's got a kind of leaning forward, grasping, clutching. We are not in our seat. We aren't arrived right here. We've left this moment, this body, this awareness, this heart. And it's like we're on our way somewhere else. So one of the things, I have a reflection I've been doing from this kind of prayer of, may I live this day, just like live this moment. And when I reflect on what stops me from living the day, it's the sense that I'm on my way somewhere else. There's a wanting for something else. In any moment, that it's not enough right now, that something more needs to happen. So with desire, if we're chasing after anything, even the most subtle sense of wanting to affirm that we're here, we're not fully arrived. Now here's the mechanism of wanting mind, of this kind of universal force of wanting, is that it fixates, and it fixates on substitutes. In other words, there's a classic line, I think it was Thoreau, that we spend our life fishing only to find it wasn't fish we were after. Okay. So one of the most deep parts of the suffering of wanting is that we fixate on something And it's not what we really wanted. And yet we haven't really attended in a deep way. This is from D.H. Lawrence. He says, men are not free when they are doing just what they like. Men are only free when they are doing what the deepest self likes. And there is some getting down to the deepest self. It takes some diving. So in the face of desire, and we all fixate, we all go through the day out, my want right now is to get this done, my want is to get dinner, my want, you know, we fixate. There's a process of pausing and diving deeper so that we're not in the trance of fixated desire. And that's where I want to explore now. Okay? How do we pay attention so we drop under the habitual level of wanting and grasping and trying to get and look good and prove and live the day, live the moment by dropping deeper. And I want to say that what we're focusing on tonight is not the, in the way what I'll be addressing, is not the most anguished, addictive level of wanting. I think that deserves almost its own talk, and certainly in the spring we do a day long on addiction when there's a full blown anguish, where life is being destroyed real actively. So tonight is more about the way that we get hooked and distracted and preoccupied daily on the different levels of wanting, especially the ego wanting of just to keep proving ourselves and feeling good about ourselves by accomplishing. So how do we practice? And I'm going to cover three dimensions of practice. And the first is mindfulness. How do we deepen mindfulness in the moment, a real unconditional presence, so that rather than having the self, as one person described, you know, like really, you know, clutching and small around it, there's a sense of presence and more freedom. That's the first unconditional presence. The second is, how do we forgive it? Because part of the challenge with wanting mind is there's a part of us that doesn't like ourselves for it. Okay? And the third is, how do we reflect on our aspiration in a way to cut through to the deeper wants, what the deepest self longs for? Okay, so part one. The essence of mindfulness training is to recognize what's going on and to allow, to just hold the presence with it. So it's recognize and allow. And so the beginning with desire, desire usually has a very active mental component where we have what's classically called if-only mind. Oh, if only I could get that done, or if only I could do a good job on this, or if only I could have the right partner, or if only I could lose weight, then I'd be happy. This is the basic belief that the Buddha described as the delusion that keeps the wheel of samsara rolling. So the first step is just to notice, okay, wanting mind. You can name it however you want. Desire, wanting, craving, clinging, different levels of intensity. But there's an attitude that's really important right from the start. And that is, when wanting arises, not to judge it as bad. Not to judge it as bad. That it's like any other wave in the ocean. If you can pay deep attention, it can bring you back home again. Anything that comes up can be what I call a Dharma doorway. And desire is a powerful one. Okay? So, some of you might remember Melarepa, the Tibetan practitioner and teacher who, you know, he'd meditate for years in a cave, and these demons would appear. And of course, the desire demons were some of the most, you know, tenacious and fierce ones in a certain way. And his way with them when they'd come It's wonderful that you came today. You should come again tomorrow. From time to time, we should converse, you know. And then if they were particularly adamant, you know, he would offer himself into the mouth of the demons. It's like that deep a bowing. Like, okay, you're here. Full presence with this. This too, this too. So that's the attitude that allows the full presence. Then we just note what's happening, recognize it, and then begin to be with it with a kind of interest. It's really worth being interested. Makes a big difference. And then we can begin to investigate. Now, some of you were here last week when I described the acronym RAIN. How many of you were here for the RAIN talk? And I see. So let's, again, it's the same process. Recognize and allow. And then we deepen it with a kind of investigation where we keep on recognizing and allowing in a deeper and deeper way. What's going on right now? What's this like? Just the way I had you do when you were sitting and asking about what's it like when you're desiring? What's the belief? Well, the belief is this will make me happy. And what's the feeling? Well, there's a clutching in the chest. Well, there's kind of some fear, actually, fear that I won't get it. There's a leaning forward. There's a not liking myself for this, to start recognizing what's happening. And then allow again. There is a Zen nun from the 15th century, and her mantra was, I meet life with my whole body. I meet life with my whole body. Now, what's that like if you do that right now? If you just say, okay, I'm going to meet this moment with my whole body. When desire arises, if we can wake up out of the storyline, I have to have this to feel that, and just feel the wanting and the fearing, because they usually are commingled, and meet it with our whole body's awareness. So I'd like to invite you to check in again. Let's do the same kind of exploration again. How to bring this unconditional presence. Again, to sense something you've been really wanting or craving. Or maybe not wanting, because it's really the same animal. And sense the situation, if there is one that really most is when this is activated. Maybe it involves another person, something you want from them, a way you want them to treat you. Or it might be to do with a substance, or it might be a change in yourself. And you can just mentally whisper what you want a few times over and over. See if you can connect with the feelings in your body. Now for some, with these kind of reflections, it's hard to get in touch, and that's okay. To be completely allowing of that. So just whatever's happening, just to recognize it. So maybe you're recognizing desire and wanting. You can just note that. Or maybe you're feeling blank or tired or restless. Note that. You can't do this wrong, in other words. If it's a strong desire, just notice if there's a belief, you know, that if I could have this, I'd be okay or be happy. Just to notice that. Just to meet the experience with your whole body, unconditional presence, whatever's happening. breathe with it. So your only job right now is to recognize what's happening and allow it. An interested attention. See how fully present you can be with whatever is going on. Desire, fear, tiredness. Just to notice and allow. Fully here. And the inquiry is, when you're fully here, is anything really missing? Is anything wrong? Can you sense desire or fear? Whatever's here is just a current in awareness that you're fully here, awake, allowing. Right now, here. Is anything missing? So the awakening from the trance of desire is awareness of desire. When we're fully aware, when we're in that fullness of presence, is there anything missing? If there feels like there is, and we then bring full awareness to that feeling, then is there anything missing? The nature of full presence is that it reconnects us. Now, the challenge, as I mentioned, is there's often an undercurrent when we're wanting, when we're clinging, when we're desiring, that something really is missing and that it's wrong with us and that there's something wrong with us for wanting. And then what happens is because, you know, you might say, okay, the thoughts of desire, I'm wanting this person to pay attention to me, or I'm wanting things to go a certain way on, you know, next weekend. And we come back and we notice the story and we notice our feelings, and then our mind flips out there again. So then we get really frustrated because as much as we're present with the desire, it just keeps on reasserting itself. And sometimes we act out. We'll keep having the thought that, okay, I'm going to go to the refrigerator and get another helping. Okay, be with that. I feel it in the body, feel the craving. And then after four rounds, we find that we're already at the door and it's already opened, you know. So that's where we come to the next piece, which is we can try to be present, but often the desire will reassert itself and we'll end up acting out. And there needs to be a deep commitment to forgiving. Okay? Now, I'll share a story with you of one man from this area that I did some interviews with on his meditation practice, and he came because he and his partner had been dating for about a year, and they had broken up. She left him, and yet they were going to get together and have dinner and kind of reconsider. It's one of those in and out relationships, and he was absolutely obsessed and addicted. in his thoughts. Like he just could not, he couldn't stop thinking about, you know, what will make her want to be with me? What did I do wrong? How will the next dinner go? Sexual fantasies, things going well, things crashing. You know, he just was. And so we were doing this practice of, you know, okay, sense the desire, the wanting to come into your body and what's happening. And he, you know, what he found in his body was enormous agitation and restlessness and wanting to jump out of his skin. It's like he just was much happier just revving away in his thoughts. So what was most helpful for him was when I just simply said, you know, it's not your fault that you're completely obsessed and addicted right now. You know, it's one of the great drives of the universe to mate, to connect, to have sex, to feel close. You know, those are big drives. And so when he repeated a few times, it's not my fault. You know, it's really not my fault. There started to be some space. And that the obsessive thoughts kept churning through, but if he could add on, it's not my fault, there was just more and more of a sense of not taking it personally, which made it so there wasn't as much glue. He wasn't quite so identified. This is like Milarepa saying, okay, it's just the demon, it's just, you know, just the demons of desire and bowing to them in some way. It's not my fault. So what happened for them is that they got together for that dinner. He was a little able to be himself because he wasn't so quite so down on himself for the fact of wanting so much, you know. And they ended up getting back together for a few more months, and then they realized they really didn't want to be together. And then so, and I'll tell what that led to basically was by forgiving the wanting. He had a little more space, a little more presence. Didn't go away, still was pretty compelling, but he was able to get a little more in touch with what he really wanted. That's the next step I want to talk to you about. So there's unconditional presence, there's forgiving the tenacity, and then there's remembering what really matters. This is the last part. There's a reason in Buddhist practice that we over and over again reflect on our aspiration. We spend so much time in the trance of the small stuff, and our wants are layered. There's a difference between the wants where there's clinging, have to have to be happy, and what we call aspiration, which is the heart's intuition of what's possible, of who we are really. It's that longing to really be fully what we are. With aspiration, we're not leaning into something else. The aspiration is really for homecoming into the fullness of what is right here. So it's like the people that went to the king's palace, they lost sight. They forgot. And we forget every day. Any day we look at our day, we can backtrack and see how many moments we were hitched to something smaller. And we kind of lost track of what really mattered. It's like that, some of you might remember that cartoon of these goldfish swimming in the open sea and one saying to the other, "So what is it your heart really longs for?" And the one answered, "Well, you know, the fishbowl, the colored gravel, the plastic tree, you know, the small castle." You know. So it's like we lose track, you know. So with this man that I was telling you about, when the next retreat he came to, he of course had the next candidate in mind, and it wasn't quite as anguished because somebody hadn't just broken up with him, but he was still on this, you know, is this going to be the right mate? And so we did the same practice of being with and forgiving, but then there was this real inquiry. When you're feeling strongly this kind of fixated desire, I want this person, I want it to work out, what is it we're really wanting? And I asked him that, you know, when your mind is just cycling and cycling. I want this person to like me back and so on. What is it you're really wanting? What are you really wanting at those moments? And so, you know, he began with saying, you know, I want to feel special. I want to feel good. It feels good to be in a mutual, like, I want connection. And he kind of stayed there. So I said, okay, when you meditate, just meditate on that wanting and see what's under it. Just keep asking the question, what is it I really, really want? What is this heart longing for? So at the next time, a few days later, we had a one-on-one interview, and he said, you know, here's what happened. He said that he was meditating on wanting connection, and then as he went deeper, he opened up to real grief, like a heartbrokenness, like this was the longing of 10,000 lifetimes, this heartbrokenness. And when he stayed with it, you know, so what's really here, there was just this deep yearning to belong. Just to belong. And he did what I mentioned. He met that with his whole body. He just full presence, being with this, recognizing it, just feeling it. It's like Mary Oliver says, to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. So he just felt, okay, longing to belong. Longing to belong, and he kept letting go into that. And he said that when I kept opening into that and letting go into that, he said all there was this kind of luminous belonging, like just this whole world was just glimmering with love. There wasn't even a me longing. There was just love. And so this is what he said to me. He said, Tara, I keep finding, and I did it. He said he did a number of rounds of it where he'd say, what do I want? He said, when I can really stay with it, I keep finding that what I'm wanting is right here in the presence. It's right here. But it's not that easy because the habit is to keep on forgetting and want something out there. Sri Narasargadatta, one of my favorite teachers, put it nicely, said the problem is not that you have desires, but that you desire so little. She said, why not desire at all? Why not want complete fulfillment, joy, and freedom? In other words, connect with what the deepest heart longs for. This is Rumi. A strange passion is moving in my head. My heart has become a bird which searches in the sky. Every part of me goes in different directions. Is it really so that the one I love is everywhere? So we'll have a closing meditation in just a few moments, but to say that it's absolutely natural to desire, we're designed to. And it's one of the great forces of the universe. It can be enormous suffering when it begins to define our life, and equally enormous freedom when we bring a kind of presence to it and discover embedded in that desire is love. And it's the love that really is our nature. We come home to our own being. It's like the desire is this river that carries us back to the ocean. In this final meditation, we'll do a brief reflection and then a treat for you for this evening, a little bit of listening to some sound currents that can really be transporting. So again, just to close your eyes, let the attention go within. And just feel the breath. Feel yourself here. And you might sense, as you've been this evening, an area that has been maybe pulling you around of wanting, wanting for something to be different, wanting what feels like is missing in your life. And see if you can bring your attention right into the very feeling and sense of the wanting heart. And just to inquire, what is it I really am longing for? Just right now, you can even clear the mind and sense, what is my heart longing for? What really matters? Breathing with that, letting go into that deeper and deeper. What is it really that this heart longs for? To feel the longing with sincerity, to meet it with your whole body, is to open into the belonging. Surrendering into and opening to the deepest longing. Discovering that as we come truly home to what we long for, we come home to the deepest part of our being. This is who we are. Just relaxing now with the presence that's right here, this moment, this space, and allowing yourself to, in a receptive way, allow the sounds to come and go, feeling the awareness and the field of love that is here. Thank you. May the blessings of loving kindness touch our lives, awaken our hearts, and allow us to be of benefit to all beings everywhere. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.